Well, this is D.G. Martin. Welcome to Who's Talking. This is, I guess, part two because Lenny Rosenbluth was good enough to come and visit with me. And we talked about his growing up and his introduction to basketball, and we got him to Chapel Hill. But I thought you would also like to have Lenny talk about that his time at Carolina as a basketball player. Lenny, you, when we were talking earlier, you told us how you got to Chapel Hill and you just loved it, but you had to go to Stanton Military Academy for
yes.
a while. And you told us a little bit about that. Anything else we need to know about
that? No, sir. People ask me, well, how did you like Stanton Military Academy? And I tell them I loved it. I thought it was great. Got to march with a rifle and
you have to wear a uniform?
Go to bed and had to wear a uniform. And I thought I had a great experience there. We had a good basketball team. We lost the first game by 2 points to the University of Virginia freshmen. We beat them again. We beat West Virginia freshmen came to our gym, and we beat them, and we beat everybody else for
the
championship.
Did anybody ever try to pull you away from your commitment to North Carolina?
Oh, University of Virginia. He was there almost every game, the coach.
And what did how did he make his pitch?
You know, would you like to come to the University of Virginia? I said, Coach, I told Frank McGuire that I'm going with him.
Was Coach McGuire already at Carolina?
He was at Carolina, he came a year before.
How was he doing that first year?
I believe he was 11-10.
Uh-huh.
But they were in the Southern Conference back then. And they did come up. I believe they played at Washington Lee. The Stanton coach took our team down there to see him, and that's the first time I saw him. He didn't have to check in on me or anything
else.
You
were committed.
I'm going where you're going, coach. He knew that. He knew that, and there's some funny stories with coach and myself. Like I said, we had a relationship before I came to Carolina. I really liked him, and you know, when I got to Carolina, he was the varsity coach, and I was a freshman.
Oh, that in those days you had to play freshman.
You had to play freshman ball, so he had a friend, Harry Rosenthal, who ran a jewelry shop in Durham, and that was one of his friends. And Harry used to bring some delicatessen from New York down into Durham, and Coach would call me and say, Lenny, we're going to Harry's for lunch. So we would go to Harry's for lunch, and Harry's son, his name I think was Dick Rosenthal, played for Duke freshman, but I don't know if he ever made the varsity or not. But anyhow, we went for a lot of lunches over there, and Coach would call me up and say, we're going to scout somebody tonight. Come on, we're going to go to scout. So I would go to him with him to go scout.
Even when
Wake
you were
Forest.
Freshman.
I was a freshman. And then—
Who was your freshman coach?
Buck Freeman.
Uh-huh.
Buck Freeman was his coach when he was at St. John's.
Was he the guy who stuck with
he
Frank?
He stuck with Frank, and Frank stuck with him.
And people, the stories were that maybe that he was really the genius in terms of—
Yes. Coach McGuire did not do X's and O's. Yeah, that was Buck. Coach McGuire would tell you what he did not want you to do on a court. Did not want you to do on a court. For example, if you threw a ball into the center from the center of the court, he would go crazy, because percentages show that you're not going to get many passes through from the center to pass into the pivot. Go from the side. Go from the angles. Those things, things he did not want you to do, which is more important than what to do. We all knew what to do. You know, you play high school basketball. There are things that everyone does, but he refined the game by practicing what you do in the last 2 minutes of a game, whether you're ahead or whether you're down or not, what to do. Because they didn't have a 30-second clock back then. So there was strategy what to do at the end of a game. You know, hold the ball, not hold the ball, go after him, not go after him. But he was a little different. But what he did, he got you up for the game. But he didn't have to make any speeches because you had that University, North Carolina, on the top. And to me, that was enough. I didn't have to get up for a game. I was ready to play for him. And
what about your other freshmen when you got down here and the guys you were playing with? These were the makings of your championship team already?
No. When I came down, I came down with Bob Young, who played for Delphi High School in New York, and I played against him up in the Glen Falls Invitational Tournament, prep school tournament. Joe Quigg also played, but we didn't play against his team. They got beat before we played them. So Bob Young and myself and a kid named Frankie King. Now, each one of us, Frankie King came with a shopping bag. That was his suitcase. And Bob Young and myself had a little suitcase with all our clothes in it. So we had a little suitcase. We got on the train in New York, and we came to Raleigh, and we were picked up in Raleigh. And, you know, the first thing I had to do and it's funny, when I got into UNC, the next morning, Frank McGuire said, "We got to go see the president. He wants to ask you questions." So we go up and see Dr. Friday. First thing I did, and he wants to know how I got to Carolina. You know, because
you just tell him the same story you told us.
I said, "Dr. Friday, I'm following Coach McGuire. Wherever he was going, I was going." He said, "Good enough," and that was it. But
that's a great story.
He wanted to know how in the world a kid from New York went to Stanton Military Academy and then came to the University of North Carolina. So that was it. But then when I moved up to the varsity, Coach calls me in the office and says, "Lenny, we have a different relationship now. I'm your head coach."
Did he really say that?
That's what he said.
What was he?
That's what he said.
He said, "We're still friends, but not the same kind
of
friends."
That's right. That's right.
And did that make a difference, do you think? Or did he treat you more severely as the coach than he did when you asked him?
Yeah, but he wanted me to understand that now, you know, he's my coach, which is good.
Well, how did that first year on the varsity go for you guys?
We won 10 and lost 11. And we were, at one time, we were very good. And then I think we lost either 7 out of the last 8 games or something. There were problems.
What do you mean? On the team?
There was a little problems on the team.
Well, you've said.
I don't know whether or not they disliked the way that I might have been taking too many shots because what McGuire did for me. Now, McGuire knew. I don't know if he ever saw me play, but he might have. He never came to me and said, "I saw you play." But I would play freelance. There were no X's and O's. I didn't pass to someone and run here. I was free to go wherever I wanted on the court. So I would help bring up the ball. I would go into the pivot. I would go to the side. Wherever I ran, I'm following the ball,
basically. And coach is okay with that? You think some of the players thought...
The coaches might not have liked that. The players might not have liked that.
Did they signal that to you?
No, but everything is runs in many seconds. When you are cutting to the basket, if you don't get the ball right away, it's not there anymore. And if it comes a little later or it comes at your feet, you're losing the ball. And that sort of happened a little bit where I wasn't getting the ball where I needed to get the ball because it didn't take me long to get my shot off. I mean, all I needed was to get the ball, take one dribble, and right up. And it's...
Pete Brennan, a long time ago, told me, he said, "It was easy for us." He said, Coach said, "Get the ball to Lenny."
He said,
"I was a good shot, but Lenny was a sure thing."
Yeah, by that time, I learned to take every shot that there is. Hook shots, jump shots, one-handed shots. In fact, my warm-ups would probably drive a coach crazy because when we came out after the layup drill, anybody shooting, I would go to the corner and take hook shots where people take three-point shots now. I wanted to see how many hook shots I could make from the corner.
And could you make them from the corner?
Yes. I would make 3 out of 10, 4 out of 10 wow. hook shots from the corner because that was getting me loose. And then the last 6 or 7 minutes, I would go to the spots where I would shoot from and take those shots. But in the beginning—
But to warm up, you'd take these three-point hook shots.
But there were no three-point bank.
Right.
I would go in the corner. And Tony Vadovich had a great hook shot. We'd both go to the corner and see how many we could make out of 10.
Well, this is your sophomore year.
This is my sophomore year. Yes.
You said it was about an even, but you had a downturn at the end.
Yes, we had a downturn at the end.
So how did the coach deal with that?
The following year, he brought in new players, and he brought in Joe Quigg, Pete Brennan, Tommy Kearns, and Bobby Cunningham.
So now these guys, but they still had to play freshman ball.
They had freshmen. They had a great freshman team. Yes.
But did they come on to play with you in your junior year or your senior
year? Junior year.
So they were coming up from the freshman.
They were junior
team.
So you knew they were. Yeah, they were good.
Coach knew they were coming.
They were good. They were good, yes.
Ease the other guys out.
Yes. And we had a good season that year. For the first time, well, to give you an example.
Lenny, hold that thought. Time's running so fast. We'll take a break. If you join us later, I'm visiting with Lenny Rosenblum. We're talking about his years at Carolina, and he and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Lenny Rosenblum. We're talking about we're moving towards talking about the championship game in 1957 when Carolina defeated Kansas. But what we're doing is getting there. And Lenny, when you took a break, I had you at your junior year.
Okay.
And then you got all these great guys coming in.
But we got to go back to my freshman year.
Okay.
When my first freshman basketball game, the only scholarship player was Bob Young and myself. Okay. And the rest were walk-ons or, you know, have open practice and kids who played high school basketball.
Why hadn't the coach been out recruiting?
Bob Young and myself were the only players that were there.
Well, those were two good players.
Yeah.
But that was it.
That was it.
And were you looking forward into the teams, the varsity teams? Did you see any people that you
know? Yeah, they had Jerry Vader was there. He was all-conference his freshman year. Tony Vadovich, we had some good ball players, but it didn't gel. Freshman year, the first freshman game, we couldn't even get into the gym. The gym was locked. We had to find someone to open up the gym.
Woolen Gym.
There might have been 50 people at the game my freshman year. By the end of my freshman year, the gym was packed. And when the freshman game was over, half the people walked out. I brought the people into the gym because I was taking shots.
So the word was getting around. Was it mostly you were shooting?
Shooting, because I was taking shots that they'd never seen before. I mean, hook shots from way out.
This is the Stephen Curry kind of magic that you were bringing.
It was just the different shots that I had, not the normal shots of the day at that time. So we brought people in, so people were interested. My junior year, when Pete Brennan and Joe Quigg and Bobby Cunningham and Tommy Kearns come around, that made up the nucleus of our championship season. We were ranked for the first time. We were ranked in the top 20 in the nation. And we had a good team, except Wake Forest had our number, and they beat us in the ACC tournament. We tied state for the conference championship for the season, but then Wake Forest knocked us off.
Now, who was did you see Bones McKinney again at that point, or was he someplace else? Was it state?
Bones didn't realize who I was until years later. When I came over to him and said, Bones, you know, he knew who I was because I played against him. I said, you don't remember me, do you? He says, let's go back to 1951 with Boston. He says, oh, my God, that was you? And I said, yeah.
Well.
Yeah, he didn't realize, you know, who I was that I played against him. But
Wake Forest upset you in the tournament, and that way you couldn't go to the NCAA.
No, you had to win the ACC tournament.
Could you go to the NIT?
Nothing. That was it. Go home. That was home. And coach never let us forget that game.
What do you mean?
They killed us. They killed us. It was like, I don't know, 26 points or something.
Well,
they won with ease.
Dickie Hemrick? I was trying to
think. No, Dickie Hemrick wasn't there. They had Lefty Davis, Jackie Murdoch, Jim Gilley, Ernie Wiggins. But they were good. Murdoch and Wiggins were the number one and number two foul shooters in the nation. They didn't miss. And they were good. And they matched up against us great. And, I mean, every game against them was tough. Our senior year, we had to play them and beat them four times. Four times. And, like I say, every game was right down to the wire. But going back to the beginning of that season, Coach McGuire said, guys, you know, we have a good ball club, but remember the Wake Forest game. And he said, Lenny, you're the captain of this team. And I said, Coach, no. And he says, so I called a meeting of our team right away when season started. And I had a schedule for each player. And I said, look at the schedule. No one should beat us.
And so said, you really believed that you thought,
I mean, told them right away. I said,
in any season to think that you can get away with
that. No one should beat us. I said, we have points all over the place. Name the points. Kearns, Quigg, Brennan. These are a lot of points. Bobby Cunningham, who did not like to shoot but could shoot, and myself. We had the points. It was the idea of playing together, rebounding, and doing what coach says. We should not lose a game. And I said that right away to the guys.
What was it? You're taking over like a captain should, but very seldom does. But what were your practices like?
The practices were good. They didn't like the way I practiced because I would not practice hard. I believe that if I'm going to get hurt, I'm going to get hurt in practice.
Oh, so you're protecting yourself?
I'm protecting myself.
And the what about the other guys?
Well, the other guys thought I was loafing in practice, but I didn't want to do anything in practice that would make them look bad. Because I knew I can get off the floor quicker than they could for a rebound. And the way I rebounded, I didn't want to hurt anybody. Because, believe it or not, I never had a rebound taken away from me all through college. If I got my hands in that ball was mine. I was coming down with it. Because I found out early, if you go up with two hands to get a rebound, you can only jump so high. If you take one step and go up one-handed, you're going higher than you can jumping that way. So all my rebounding was I would come up with one foot going up cross, getting the ball with one hand, and then bringing the other hand up and coming down. As I came down, the ball is coming in this way. Down, and anybody that put their hand to try to get the ball away from me, my arms closed, and I took a dribble, and he fouled me.
And were you a good foul shooter?
I should have practiced more. I shot 70-something percent, but I just don't go up and shoot the ball. So I caught the ball differently. I never caught the ball two-handed. I caught a ball this way. Because I watched the baseball players, all ground balls. They never caught a ball this way.
Or a good end, or a good passer receiver
in
football.
They got the glove down. They got the hand this way. So if it's going to bounce off you, you're going to get it. So why would I catch a basketball this way? So I always caught a basketball this way. Plus, I caught the ball. I'm ready to shoot. My one-handed jump shot. So I when I played inside. Everything's changed when I went into the pivot inside because they couldn't play me inside. I would get the ball and take hook shots or turn around and take jump shots. So they had a hard time playing against me.
If they kept
inside.
You from going to the basket, direct to the basket, you're just...
I played with my back to the basket a lot easier because it was easier for me to take a step out and go up for a jump shot and turn around in midair. And I know where I was at all times.
So you would turn around. You told us in the earlier segment that you had to be square to the basket when
turn
you
around.
About release the ball. So
turn
you would jump.
Jump
turn
and
around.
Turn around at the same time. I would come to the foul line, get the ball, go up, turn around in midair, and be square to the basket. Everything was square to the basket. I never took a shot that wasn't square to the basket.
If you joined us late, I'm visiting with Lenny Rosenblum. We're talking about his playing in basketball at the University of North Carolina, and we're going to get him later on to tell us about that championship game. And I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Lenny Rosenblum. He's telling about his experience playing basketball at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And we're talking about that season in which he and the team went undefeated. And he told me something that startled me, and that was that he believed from the beginning that that team could go undefeated. A miracle for any college team.
Yes.
To go. But you believed it.
I used to tell Coach how many games we had left. I said, don't worry, Coach, you're going to win them all.
Now, did your teammates adopt that?
Or did they say? After the Maryland game at Maryland, they believed it.
Why was the Maryland game such
because,
a
Because Maryland had a good team, and we played at the University of Maryland. It was the biggest crowd south of Madison Square Garden. And
Ever
at that time. And that Cole gym was a big gymnasium. And they had us down 4 points with 2 minutes to go. And Coach McGuire called timeout. We had the ball. And he says, I believe you guys are beat. And I want you to shake.
He said that?
He said, I want you to shake hands with them and tell them they played a good ball game and we'll start our streak next game. And I looked at him and said, Coach, you're crazy. I said, we're gonna win. Don't worry about it. And we did. Kearns came down and scored, made it 2 points, and then somehow we got back there. We ended up being tied. They had the ball the last minute and held it and went in for a shot and missed it. Then it went into the first overtime, and the same thing happened in the end of the first overtime. They had the ball, went in for the shot, missed it. Then we went into the next overtime, and we won the game.
Well,
and coming back, there was a snowstorm, so we couldn't fly home. We had to take the train home, so they got a sleeper car for us, except none of the tall guys could go in the sleeping car. We couldn't sleep. So Quigg, myself, and Brennan, we sat in the restroom, which had some place to sit the whole night because we couldn't go sleep in the car. And we just talked about the season, and they said, yeah. He said, I believe you. We're going to win them all.
Well, I'd love to talk about the whole season, but I'd like to talk about the ACC tournament and the postseason and your all's road to the NCAA finals.
Right. The ACC tournament, the winner of that tournament goes to the NCAA. If you lose, the season's over. That's it. The first game, I don't know who we played against. Maybe we always used to end up playing Virginia. We beat them rather easily. Excuse me, it's Clemson, because I probably had the two best ball games of my career back-to-back. We played Duke at Duke, and we beat Duke at home by 2 points, I think. And we played Duke at Duke, and it was a close ball game, but I hit 40 points against them. And then the next game, we played Clemson in the ACC tournament, and I came back with 45 against Clemson. So those are two big back-to-back games. So then we played Wake Forest.
Now, Wake Forest beat you in the...
The year before.
You're ready to go.
This is the fourth time we're playing them. Each game, we beat them at their court, our court, the Dixie Classic, and now we're playing them the fourth time in the ACC tournament. And each game was under 7 points, 2 points, 3 points, 4 points. And we're down by 2 points with 40-some-odd seconds to go. And Maguire calls timeout, and he just says, get the ball to Rosenbluth. I mean, no uncertain terms. Just get the ball to him. And went back out, and I went toward the key foul line, and Bobby Cunningham hits me with a pass. Now, I knew someone tripped over my foot and went flying toward the sidelines. But then I started to dribble, and I knew I heard the whistle because I immediately went up for a hook shot from a little bit toward the foul line in, and it went in. And if you take a picture, there's a picture in the Raleigh paper of the hook shot. My shoulders are square, and my hand is perfectly going in, perfect form. And the ball went in. To this day, 60 years later, to this day, the Wake Forest people say, I charged. To this day, Jackie Murdoch, who became a good friend of mine, you charged, you charged. Well, the referee didn't see it that way. They said, basket is good, and one shot, and it put us 1 point ahead. They missed the shot. They had a foul. We won the game by 2 points. That's how close it was. Because if I don't make that shot, we're not going anywhere. Wow. Because you couldn't foul either Murdoch or Ernie Wiggins. They're going to make their shots. They were the leading foul shooters in the nation.
This was the semifinal game.
The semifinal game.
Who did you play in the finals?
We played South Carolina, and we just destroyed them.
Was South Carolina good that year?
They had Grady Wallace. Grady Wallace was the leading scorer in the nation. I mean, he can shoot the basketball. So South Carolina was tough.
But they weren't of the quality. They
no,
were European
no,
quality or even
no,
Wake Forest
no,
or Duke's quality,
no,
I guess.
No,
uh-huh. But they,
no.
How did they get to the finals?
They beat NC State, and they beat, you know, Grady Wallace was a great shooter. But we stopped him fairly well for us. So
You didn't – once you won the ACC tournament, you didn't have the same long pathway. You went straight to Eastern Regionals.
We went to New York City, where we were not well enough known at that time in the NCAA competition to go right away. So we had to have what is known as a playoff game.
Mm.
So we had to play Yale to actually –
Get into it.
Right.
I think it was 16 teams at that point.
Yeah, I think so. So we played Yale at the Garden, and we beat them. Then we went to Philadelphia to play, which was the nemesis of NC State, Canisius College, because the 2 years before, Canisius always beat NC State. The year before, when they had Ronnie Shavalek, and they had a great team, they went, I think, to 4 or 5 overtimes before Canisius beat them. But Canisius did beat them. So we played Canisius the first game, and we beat them fairly easy. I set a Palestra scoring record of 39 points in that game.
Wow.
So we beat them.
So then you're to the Eastern Regional Finals.
The Regional Final. We played Syracuse, and we beat them. And beat Syracuse, which was a rough team.
But not a squeaker. That wasn't a squeaker.
No, I would say maybe 12, 15 points all the way. It was never close.
So you're going...
Now we're going to Kansas City to play Michigan State the first round.
What was the... I tell you what, let's take a break and then come back and talk about the talk about the Michigan State game. And then if you win that game, what happens then?
Then we go to Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Lenny Rosenbluth is my guest. We've been visiting. This is really the second program with Lenny, and we've been talking about his career at Carolina, and we've got just the few minutes to talk about reaching the NCAA Finals in Kansas City. And you had to play one team first.
For Michigan State. Now, we didn't know anything about Michigan State, and teams that played against us. You didn't have nationwide TV and scouting and this. You had buy a scouting report from professionals who make up scouting reports, but they could never scout our team because we didn't have any plays. So we were all freelancing. You know, I would go here, there, go around. But they knew they had to stop me and hope that they can stop Pete Brennan and Joe Quigg and stop
it. Ask you this before, but you've emphasized that you didn't have a set play.
No, we didn't have any set plays.
Was that a Lenny Rosenbluth thing, or was that a Frank McGuire?
McGuire knew that I was a freelance player. I didn't know X's and O's. I had no high school coaching. That if I had to pass the ball to someone and go cut here, I would not have been the player I was in Carolina.
Would he change after you were gone? Did he become a X's and O's guy?
Don't know. But to me, he let me go wherever I wanted on the floor. So what I did, if they played a zone against us, I became the overload man. You know, so I was, like I say, that summer up in the mountains, I saw the court differently. So I can get free. So I would run to a spot where if they gave me the ball, I was basically wide open. Or I went inside, where it was very difficult for one man to play me. They had to change their defense because one man couldn't play me inside, basically, until Michigan State and Johnny Green. That was a different story.
What happened? What happened?
Well, every time I turned around and take my jump shot, Johnny Green blocked it.
He just jumped up and blocked it.
He just jumped up and blocked it.
So what are you thinking when this starts?
Well, then I had to change around and not go inside anymore. I had to go outside and face him because all my shots that I was taking from the inside back to the basket but turning around in midair, I was able to get my shot off about everybody else except Johnny Green, who was jumping high enough for him to swat the ball away. So
did you think? When he started swatting that ball,
I said, I'm in trouble.
you think, okay, well, I thought we were going to win every game. Maybe we're not going to win this one.
Yeah. Oh, no, I thought we were going to win this game.
Why? I mean, when you...
It was just the mentality of me and the team. We are going to win every ball game.
How did you finally win it?
Very hard. The first overtime, the score was tied. We go into the first overtime game, and... the game has 6 seconds left to go. They are 2 points ahead, and Johnny Green, their All-American, is on the foul line with a one-on-one.
It's over.
It's over. One of the guards from Michigan State goes over to Tommy Kearns and says, 30-1 is not a bad season. You know, so Johnny Green misses the shot. Pete Brennan gets the rebound, dribbles the whole length of the court, takes a jump shot from inside the foul circle, and makes it and ties up the game. And now we go into the second overtime, back and forth. The third overtime, I was lucky enough to steal the ball twice on inbound passes and score both times for us to get the win.
The magic was there.
The magic was still there. And now we're going into the Kansas game. And McGuire, before the game, was sitting in the locker room and says, you know, what a great season we're having. And we are a better team than Kansas. But they have Wilt Chamberlain. Kansas cannot beat you, but Wilt can beat you. So he says, we have to box out Chamberlain. We have to get in front of Chamberlain. And we're going to have to hope that they're not hitting outside shots because there's no way that we could have played behind Chamberlain. He was just too big and too athletic. And that's what we did.
So you just ran a boxing one zone type
We played three men around Chamberlain.
Three?
Three men. Try to stop him. Give them the outside shot. If they were making their shots, different game. They were getting hesitant on who's going to shoot. And they would hesitate. They're not going to make it. And they didn't make it. And then they opened up with a boxing one on me. Why'd they worry about me when you got Chamberlain? I can't understand.
Well, of course, they have Chamberlain. They've got to worry about you. You're you're our Chamberlain.
Right, but they didn't. We got Chamberlain. Why worry about Lenny Rosenbluth? Well, they worried about me. They boxed in one on me, which left Pete and Joe in the corners, and they're making jump shots from the corners. And before you know it, we're like 11 points ahead before they get out of the box and won. And then we have, I think at seven, we're 7 points at halftime, we're ahead. Then the second half, Chamberlain starts to get the ball a little easier, and they come and get ahead of us. And then they hold the ball, and then we come back, and I foul out with a minute something
in the regular game.
In the regular game, which made me sick.
I was just wondering what it was like for you in the overtime, sitting on the bench.
It was agony. It was agony. And what people don't understand, national championship, first overtime, 5 minutes. Each team scores 2 points. Chamberlain makes 2 foul shots. That's all it scored, 2 points.
He wasn't known as a great foul
shooter. No, but he did. He made foul shots against us. We couldn't foul him. Otherwise, we would have fouled him all the time. So, 2 points. Second overtime, 5 minutes. No team scores. 0 points by both teams. Now, how can you do that? How can you have Wilt Chamberlain on your team and go 10 minutes?
Well, how were they? You weren't even there to help. You weren't.
I wasn't there, but they were holding the ball for the last shot, and they were afraid to shoot the ball, and if they did, we got a rebound, and we missed the shot, and they got a rebound, and nobody scored. And the next overtime, it went down to the last 6 seconds, and Joe Quigg gets the ball and starts driving to the basket, and he is fouled, not by Wilt. Wilt blocked the shot, knocked it way out of bounds, but he was fouled by someone else on the court, and McGuire calls timeout. We're down by 1 point, and he tells Joe, when you make both shots, he didn't say, you know, when you make both shots, here's what they're going to do. They're going to call timeout and try to get the ball in Chamberlain. So we want to make sure that we can get in front of Wilt and don't let him pass the ball in. So Joe Quigg goes to the foul line. And, I mean, if we had 50 Carolina fans there, that was a lot. There was nobody there, no cheerleaders. There was nobody there. But Joe makes both foul shots. I mean, think about it. Both foul shots in a national championship game. And they call timeout. At that time, when you call timeout, you get the ball at midcourt.
Oh, I didn't remember that.
Midcourt. So you got 7 foot one Chamberlain under the basket. The ball went out to one of them perimeter men, and then he throws it into Wilt. But he throws it a little bit too low. And Joe Quigg gets in front of it and tips the ball over to Tommy Kearns. And Tommy gets the ball, and the whole Kansas team is rushing to foul Tommy. So Tommy throws the ball way up in the rafters. And instead of fouling him where the whistle would blow, they all looked up. And by the time the ball came down, the game was over, and we won. Because they still could have fouled him and make him go to the foul line and make the shots. But that was it.
Well, you all were happy, of course.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And
yeah,
how did
yeah.
But you were with mixed feelings you must have had because you weren't there for that.
Thank God I wasn't there. We won the game. If we would have lost the game, then I would have felt, you know, so horrible. But we won the game, so it's the best thing that would happen. I foul out. Bob Young comes in for me, and with 2 points down, immediately goes to the basket and scores to tie up the game. So, I mean, the best of the worlds. I got to sit next to Coach and trying to figure out how we can win. And then we won. We're national champions. And
that's a great story.
32-0. And believe it or not, 60 years later, 61 years later, people remember our team.
Well, we'll always remember it. I wonder, you know, we said in the earlier in that first session, it changed history in North Carolina. But what did it do to your life?
Well, I was already engaged to Pat Oliver of Mount Airy, and we got married in June the 1st, I believe it was, in Mount Airy, North Carolina. And they had a parade for Andy Griffin back then, and we had more people at the wedding, I think, than they had the parade for Andy. And it certainly changed my whole life coming to Carolina. So the biggest thing was Everett Case turned me down.
Yeah,
that changed my life completely.
And there's a lesson there, I guess, in there, that the things that you think are the worst things in life sometimes turn out to be
the best. Yes, and playing for Coach McGuire I mean, I couldn't have been happier. And I thank Coach for giving me a scholarship. And I told the guys, I said, you know, this is my senior year, and all of us should thank the coach for giving us a scholarship. It's, you know, today it might be different where the player thinks that he owes the school, you know, he's gracious enough, I will go to this school. They go on ESPN, they put the hat on of the school they're going to. For me, and I know for all the guys on our team, we are so thankful that Coach would give us, be able to go to a school like University of North Carolina. I mean, it's unbelievable.
It's
unbelievable.
Way to end.
Yes.
And your spirit of appreciation for what Carolina did. And I assure you that those of us who benefited from the spectacular game will always be thankful to you, Coach McGuire, and your teammates.
I am ever so thankful to be here.
Thanks to Lenny Rosenbluth. Thanks to you for listening. This is D.G. Martin, Who's Talking, and I'll be back here before you know it.